AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Now, joining me for the Thursday interview this week is an award-winning journalist. He has worked with all of the biggest broadcasters in the United Kingdom, and in so doing, he covered some of the biggest stories in Britain and beyond over several years. Dermot Murnaghan is his name. You will know him most recently from his work with Sky News. Dermot, how are you?
I'm very good, Kieran.
Listen, thanks a million for speaking to us, and it's good to chat to you again. I know we caught up down in New Ross last year. You were over there for the Kennedy Summer School, and I remember you were telling me kind of you had just arrived, and it was a part of the country you didn't know that well, even though I think your wife is kind of arguably a Doyle from New Ross. Is that right?
Her mother was from New Ross, so she used to visit there as a child. I mean, we're both, you know, classically London Irish, English Irish, but her dad, she spent more time in lovely Longford. So got links all over the place there, and we've got a little place down in Kerry as well.
Yeah, so you've links like right across the island. I guess the most tangible link you had was with the north. So we might kind of start there. Your dad was from the north, and you moved back there as a kid. How old were you and what year?
I was 7 years old in 1965. You're right. So my dad's from Omagh in Tyrone. He joined the RAF, which, you know, let's be honest about it, wasn't too popular back in those days for a Northern Catholic to join up. But he said he wanted to fly the big aircraft. And quite frankly, you know, the Irish Air Force didn't really have them. So he was flying around in the 1950s in his RAF jets with old veterans from the Second World War. He was just a bit too young to make that. So when he left the RAF, he moved us all back to Northern Ireland in 1965. Very clever move there.
Yeah, I mean, great timing.
Could have done with a crystal ball there, because we'd been brought up in York. As I say, I was seven. I've got two brothers and a sister, and we all had these lovely Yorkshire accents. which when I went to the local school, everyone thought, yeah, there's a Brit.
So, exactly. Tell me a little bit more about that, about, I guess, how you settled into what, even by then, was really a sectarian society.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had no idea at the age of 7 years old. And, you know, my dad, you know, again, this is the politics of the time, and I suppose the civil society of the time. He married my mother, a Yorkshire woman, a Methodist, so therefore a so-called mixed marriage. I mean, my goodness me, what a way of calling that. So they, you know, they relentlessly brought us up in a non-sectarian way. Yet we were living in Armagh City with its two cathedrals just as it was bubbling up. Ian Paisley had led a march through the city about a couple of months before we moved in there. And we went to the local Catholic primary school with no idea. I had no idea what a Catholic or a Protestant was until I found out pretty soon.
Yeah, I like that way you describe it. We were brought up in a non-sectarian way. It immediately reminded me of that old, you know, saying about the North where this fella's asked walking down the street, you know, if he's Catholic or Protestant, and he says, no, I'm Jewish. And the follow-up question is immediately, well, are you a Catholic Jew or a Protestant Jew?
I mean, that's precisely it. I mean, you know, I don't know how many days or weeks it was before I found out. As I say, you know, I had a pretty Jeffrey Boycott Yorkshire accent, I think. It's been mixed and melted away since then. And I remember going to school and, you know, being told I was a Brit and, you know, getting a bit of a kicking every now and again from you know, people who became close friends of mine after that at the local Catholic primary. Lovely, great school. And then on the way back, you know, a gang of us from the school, we'd throw stones and they'd be thrown back from the local Protestant primary school. And so, you know, I, a seven-year-old boy from Yorkshire, I had no idea you know, who was who and what was what. It was great fun, but, you know, took a much more sinister turn in a couple of years after that.
What was that like when things took a real sinister turn?
We got out. You know, my parents took us out. I think, you know, my dad could see which way it was going. And as much as they tried to hold the line, they couldn't because of the education system, first and foremost. You know, the system was we lived with what turned out to be in a Catholic estate, went to Catholic schools, were being brought up Catholics. He was religiously non-religious. He would take us to our first communions and wouldn't come in. He would take us to Mass on the Sundays because we'd have to go in on Monday morning to school and, you know, tell the teachers what the priest's sermon was, and he wouldn't go in. He'd sit outside, even though, you know, he was the Catholic. But he couldn't, you know, he couldn't turn back the tide. He couldn't hold back the tide in Armagh. So we moved then to North Down, which was the other side. We were then Catholics in a majority Protestant area. So, you know, I mean, Kieran, you know, I could write a book about this. I partially am. But, you know, at the end of the day, it made me the journalist I am, you know, looking back through it and looking at that experience and, you know, working out that people are people are people are people. They have different concerns. They're brought up in different ways. They, you know, and they learn things which aren't necessarily the case about others and othering people, and you've got to try to see both sides.
Because I was about to ask that. I mean, it couldn't but, I mean, finding yourself in such a charged environment, it couldn't but influence you and influence your kind of your outlook on the world.
Oh, absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, it was, you know, you can do all the journalism training you like, you know, those formative experiences. And, you know, given the way I came into it and always been, and I've always felt that a bit as well in my journalistic career, a bit of an outsider. You know, I was an outsider when we moved to Armagh, was an outsider then from Armagh, from, you know, that Catholic schooling into then I went to a majority, again, non-sectarian, now really a Sullivan Upper School, great school in Hollywood County Down. But, you know, there were, I think, 600 students there, four of them were Catholic, and they were all called Mernon. I mean, it really, you know, it was a formative experience. But, you know, we did break down those barriers. You know, my adult friends from Northern Ireland, and nearly all, I think they are all, the surviving ones, are all from the Protestant tradition, you know, and that's the way it should be.
And then did you feel kind of, years later, when you were working for, you know, you were at ITV and BBC and Sky News and other, you know, as the North continued to be such a big story, right, kind of through up to the kind of mid-90s and 1998 and Good Friday and the Belfast Agreement and all of that, did you feel that kind of you had that bit of extra insight?
Definitely. I mean, definitely with, you know the way it is, in English, in British newsrooms. I mean, the first reaction throughout the 80s and 90s and right up to now to a Northern Ireland story, even to an Ireland story, is switch off. Don't want to know. You know, I think in part because it's too difficult to understand. And I say, yeah, well, this is pretty big. We should be doing this. And then, you know, I remember, you know, going to cover, as the peace process was kind of stuttering along, you know, there was the Downing Street Declaration in 93, and it stuttered along for 5 years with, you know, various atrocities until the whole thing was signed off in 98. And, you know, I'd come over every now and again with an ITN or an ITV crew. And quite frankly, you know, I was sometimes embarrassed by the lack of knowledge from seemingly intelligent people, otherwise intelligent about the world, but knew nothing about what was going on their doorstep. And, you know, I would be explaining things. You know, we did a live broadcast after the fish shot bomb on the Shankill. You know, awful atrocity. I mean, my God, still seared in my memory. And, you know, the producers, you know, God bless them, but they didn't have a clue. They didn't have a clue about the sensibilities. They'd say to me, you know, there were some big heavy guys watching us, you know, and they knew where I came from on the Shankill. They knew my name. You know, they'd followed me, and they were fine. You know, they were little bit intimidating, but, you know, they were obviously from paramilitaries, and you know, my producer was going up, so are you with the IRA or the UVF, to their faces. I mean, yeah. Right, okay, come over here quick, because, you know, we need to have a quick word here. And on it went.
I just kind of thinking of younger listeners, like, it's hard for them to maybe to imagine a scenario whereby you'd have kind of British Army officers and British soldiers on the streets of, you know, set politics aside, like what kind of legally speaking was kind of a British city, a city in the UK, and that it would kind of completely fly below most people's radar within Great Britain.
It did. I mean, you know, I went to university, you know, I was left in 1976, which is pretty much the height of the, you know, the really big bad troubles. I mean, I know it went on a lot longer after that, but I, you know, I kind of got out as far away as I could, as quickly as I could, because I was a teenager and I wanted to, you know, go to pubs and clubs and all the things that that weren't happening in Belfast at the time. And but I remember then there was, you know, my English student friends would always want to come back with me in the vacations because, you know, they wanted a bit of, you know, terror tourism. And I'd have to take them on the, you know, on the taxi rides up and down the Fall and take them for a pint here and there. And, you know, they were astonished and they said, well, you know, it had exactly that here. And, you know, I mean, it has all the, you know, all the infrastructure Belfast had and has all the infrastructure of a British city. I mean, you know, the lines are now being blurred. You know, Dublin doesn't look much different either. Now, does any other major European city because of the retail chains. But yet then in the 70s and into the 80s, it had cages and clicking turnstiles you had to get through and searches. And, you know, they they got a kick out of it, you know, my friends who'd come over.
But I mean, ignorance maybe is a bit unfair, maybe that apathy about what was happening in the north. I think where people were surprised was a couple of years ago in this country, certainly there was surprise. And we were under no illusions as to how kind of preoccupied people kind of in the UK or in Britain might be about the six counties. But when the DUP held the balance of power, I think people were genuinely astounded here as to just how little people within political circles knew about a party like the DUP.
I think, I mean, you're right about how much they knew about it and how much they represented the people of the north of Ireland. You know, it was treated particularly through those Brexit years, ever since, well, really the 2017 general election in the UK when Theresa May lost her majority and had to rely on DUP support. It was accepted because the Conservative Party wanted it to be seen that way, that the DUP spoke for the people of Northern Ireland.
Yeah, what do they think in the north? Let's ask the DUP.
Yeah, well, I'd be a bit of a lone voice again, you know, not trying to push any agenda, but I'd say, well, of course, you know, you just got to look at the election results there. And even then it was, you know, it's 50-50. DUP are not, you know, are not representative of all the people of the north of Ireland. There is, if you want to speak to Northern Ireland, you don't just speak to the DUP. I still don't think it seeped in.
Listen, can we fast forward a little bit to more modern times? How have you found life post Sky News?
Ah, fantastic. Hence that, well, there's an economic downside, you know, when you walk away from a decent salary. You know, you get to an age where you're driving a bus and, you know, it's very interesting and no 2 days are like bus, but it's something you're doing at a regular time, as you are now, half the age that I am. But, you know, there comes a point, I know you've got a young family, there comes a point when you think, well, you know, I'm missing them and crucial points here, there and everywhere. And I just thought, you know, you've got to go sometime, you've got to pick a time. And I did, and I'm still busy, still doing, you know, loads of stuff, but just not on a regular basis, which I love. So this week it's been Cheltenham week.
I guess there comes a point, I don't sound like I'm aging you, where you're kind of, you realize what you're effectively doing when you have a job is you're selling what's a limited resource, which is time, in return for money. And you just realize, well, you know, do I need to keep doing that?
I've used that very phrase myself in the last couple of years because, you know, you don't know, touching a lot of wood here, you don't know when, you know, heaven forfend, you know, you're not going to be able to do things that you want to do. You don't know that, but you know that it will happen. It may happen very suddenly and you coming at all, or it may happen gradually and you're still finding yourself restricted in a way. So you've got to make that calculation, you know. How much is enough? You know, you still got your brain, you still got, you know, some earning power, you've got your family, you know, and yeah, wake up and smell the coffee, whatever, whatever other cliches I can think of.
Old habits die hard, I'm sure, though, and it's a big year. I mean, US elections, there's going to be elections in the UK. In all likelihood, there's going to be a general election in Ireland before the year is out. About a quarter of the population of the planet are going to vote this year. Yeah, there's a bit of you that must still get excited.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a great statistic. I think, you know, if you added all up all the nations that claim to be democracies, I think it's, you know, it's approaching 50% of the democratic nations. But then we get into the debate about Russia and even India. Yeah. And yeah, but let's not go there. In terms of my juices, journalistic juices, yeah, they are flowing. So I'm keeping my hand in. I'm doing a bit of radio for the first time in my entire broadcasting career. I'm doing some radio with Times Radio. They've set up a very good radio station here. It's been going a couple of years great station to work for. It's great fun. I'm loving, you know, you don't have to shave. As anyone watching this on Zoom can see, you don't have to shave. You don't have to put a shirt and tie on, and you can blather away all you like. I love it.
Well, I tell you, Dermot, as a man who is not wearing a tie, hasn't shaved in a few days and does his fair share of blathering, it has been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. And thanks a million.
Great stuff. Okay, thanks very much.
Dermot Murnaghan, the award-winning journalist there.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4. On News Talk.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.